This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. In this episode, you will hear about a place that's not normally considered to be one of the city churches, but it is a chapel that stands in the City of London, and a site worth sharing. The podcast was recorded before the pandemic began, so the busy streets that we refer to don't somehow seem relevant right now. This place is the Salvation Army Chapel, which you will find on the pedestrianised route south of St Paul's Cathedral, on the way down to the Millennium Bridge. You wouldn't even notice it was there because it's contained within an office building. But if you look up, you will see an overhanging window with crosses, and that's the place we're talking about in this episode. I was lucky enough to go inside and hear more.
Now, so I'll give you a little history of this room just so. The room was designed specifically to reflect the sky in here because obviously the view is not very nice out there with the brick building, right? But it's at an angle so that the sky then reflects into that. So today it's hard to see it because it's pretty cloudy out. But on a beautiful blue sky day, this room lights up even more. So the yellow and the orange on the wall here makes the whole room almost glow with this warm feeling when you walk in. And behind this wall are small crosses that at night are backlit. So as people are walking from St. Paul's, you can see the cross.
Right below this is a very, very busy pedestrian street. It's constantly noisy and loud and buzzing, but it also feels like we're sort of hovering. It's like we're floating.
Yeah. As you come in, there is this sense of quiet. There's just, I don't know if the word is a holy space in the middle of craziness. But yeah, that's exactly what it is. My name is Commissioner Dawn Heatwall, and the rank is because of the appointment. So I am presently the chaplain at International Headquarters for the Salvation Army in central London. There's about 125 individuals that work here. Some are employees, some are Salvation Army officers from around the world.
Okay.
And so this is kind of where we come together from around the world.
How long has the building been here for?
There's been a building owned by the Salvation Army here since 1889. The building that we are in now was dedicated in 2004.
A lot of people walking past might think it's an office block.
Yes.
Because it does blend in with everything else around it.
It does, and actually the Salvation Army owns this whole block.
Right.
So this entire building is the Salvation Army's, and the International Headquarters for the Salvation Army is just on one-third of the blueprint. The other two-thirds are rented out to businesses, which pays entirely for this portion of the building.
Great.
Yes.
Perfect business plan, isn't it?
Exactly.
you've already mentioned how long it's been here, but when I think of the Salvation Army, I think of its origins in the East End, that's where I think of when I think of the Salvation Army.
That's exactly where we started, the Blind Beggar. That's where the Salvation Army began.
Is it?
It is.
Okay, tell me more.
So we were originally the Christian Mission, and then it became the Salvation Army. So it came out of the fact that William Booth was a pastor of another denomination, and he started bringing street people into the church, and the established church didn't appreciate that. And so he said, I'm going to start my own church then. And so he and his wife, Catherine, who was actually well-known, very quiet in some sense, and yet she preached right from the very beginning, which was also unusual to have women who were preaching from the pulpit back in the 1800s. So she and William started this new place, and then he was looking for volunteers, and he said, how about if we call it the Volunteer Army they said, no, that doesn't fit. And he said, well, we're trying to bring people to salvation, so let's go with the Salvation Army. And it stuck, and that's who we are. And presently, we are in 131 countries around the world.
Was that the aim of William Booth, do you think, or did that just happen? How did it happen, really?
It just happened. I mean, he started in the East End, and from there, it just kind of grew. Right from the very beginning, though, he was very social conscious.
Yeah.
So the famous story is told that he and his son were walking along, and he saw all these men sleeping under the bridge, and he said to his son, Bramwell, did you know about this? And Bramwell said, well, yes. And his father looked at him and said, well, then do something. So then that actually began the social ministry side of the Salvation Army, which goes hand in hand with the spiritual side. It's been from the very, very beginning. And a lot of things that people don't know about William Booth is he, for instance, was the first one to start advocating for the children working in the match factories.
Really?
And he went to Parliament and had that law changed. He also had what's called the cab horse charter, where there was actually a law at Parliament that the horses could only work certain hours,
yeah,
and had to be fed at a certain time and that kind of thing, so you didn't overwork. So he went to Parliament and he said, how come it's good enough for the horses but it's not good enough for the people? And so he pushed that through as well. So all of these things he helped push through. And he was actually well known in all of London. And there is film of his funeral where over thousands of people crowded the streets of London for his funeral procession.
So he was like a social reformer, but how did it turn into a church?
Right. Again, it was from the very beginning. I mean, he and Catherine preached the gospel of Jesus Christ from the very beginning, and their slogan was soup, soap, and salvation. So you feed people first, because they're not going to listen to the gospel unless they're fed. The soap was, they actually had women who would go into people's homes and help clean their home. Because again, he said, if you live in those kind of conditions, you can't listen to the love of Jesus Christ. So it was the two social things first, and then it was the salvation, where he said, all of these things go together. And so many churches had, at that point, had thought of them very separately. And he thought of them all as, all those pieces of a person are important.
Mm.
And so it continues to be what we do today. I mean, we are a church. We're also a well-known charity. So it just all comes together. And he, from the very beginning, he felt like you couldn't have one without the other.
If I were to attend a Salvation Army service, if that's the right word, what would I experience?
It's interesting because it would depend on the part of the world you're in.
Okay.
Okay, so for instance, if you were in Africa, there would be a lot of singing and dancing. Here in the UK, depending on which part of the UK you're in, some will be very traditional worship. Many of our churches here in the UK, as well as in the United States, have brass bands. So you'll have a brass band who will be leading the singing. So you would find all of the traditional things you would find in it, pretty much in any other church service. We might just do the music a little different.
Yeah. I wonder how the brass band thing came about, because when I think of the Salvation Army, I have to say I do think of a brass band. Do you know why that came about?
Again, it was back in the time of, it was William Booth, and the interesting thing is they would use some of the bar music that the common man would know, and they changed the words. So there are several songs in our Salvation Army songbook that would be common bar songs from the 1800s that William Booth just stole them and added Christian words to them, so that when people came into the church, they heard music they knew, and they just sang different songs.
So the chapel that we're in at the moment, is a chapel?
It is, yep.
Do people use this? How do people use this space?
So this would be more of a private space. Each of the departments here at International Headquarters have morning prayers one time a week.
Yeah.
And then on Thursday morning in the ground floor where you came in, there's a large conference room, and we would use that when there's, you know, 70 or 80.
Yeah.
But in both cases, none of these would last longer than 30 minutes.
Right.
It's a very unique space. And in the mornings, for instance, when we started at 7:30 this morning, we know it's time to finish because we can actually hear St. Paul's bells ring at 8 o'clock. So it's one of those, we're in this kind of holy space, and yet we're part of the city. And so it's just a unique It's a unique place to be.
Lucky you.
Yes. And it's always available for private contemplation. We've come up here a couple of times and people have been up here with their lunch. You know, just someplace where it's, because the cafe is beautiful and it's lovely, but it's loud.
Yeah.
It can get loud at lunchtime. Yeah. So it's just kind of a quiet, contemplative place that is probably pretty unique to most office buildings in downtown London.
But do you think other offices in the City of London could benefit from having something like this?
I think so. To offer employees, even if they're not believers, just a place to take a breath, to step away from their computer so they're not eating lunch at their desk and continuing to work. In the Western world, many times we push ourselves so hard in work to the point of exhaustion that just a 10 or 15 minute breath in the middle of the day can make all the difference for your attitude, for your work ethic, for all kinds of things. But many times we don't want to devote that space because we're trying to fill up every office space available, right? And so you're just trying to cram more people in and more people in for more productivity. And yet there's something to be said about space to breathe. And we also realize that it's an unusual thing to be able to pray in your workplace without being ridiculed or bullied or looked down upon or thinking you're crazy. And so we don't take that for granted. Many times those words are spoken in this room, Lord, thank you for this space and thank you for the opportunity that we have to come to you at the beginning of a day.
Now this is, as you say, a private chapel for the International Salvation Army headquarters that are based here. Looking out the window, I can just see through the Tower of St. Bennet's, for example, and there are so many churches around. Are you linked to any of them in any way or not?
We are linked kind of loosely. They'll put things up in our window or we'll, you know, do that kind of thing.
Any links with any institutions in the city?
Yeah, so we have kind of an unusual link with Tate Modern, actually, in that one of their curators came over and had a showing downstairs in our exhibition space.
Yeah.
And so because of that, a connection started between her and our communications department upstairs. And so they've been helpful to us. I have a unique relationship with the City of London Police Department as well.
Okay.
So they come into the cafe and they'll set up a surgery. During the summer, it focuses more on tourists to just continue to warn them about backpacks and because of pickpockets. But they'll come through the year and they'll put that out on their Twitter feed that we're going to be in the cafe at the Salvation Army so they can meet the community will come in as well for a cup of coffee and then they'll connect with them.
And actually, you're mentioning the cafe. I mean, the building here, you know, the chapel is within in the sort of office block, but there is the cafe down below, which is a space for all to use.
Right.
What's the thinking behind having a cafe?
The thinking was, we're not going to build the space internally. We're building the space to be good neighbors as well. And so that's why, even though it's in the lower ground, it's so light down there. You don't really notice that you're in the lower ground because it's all glass. And so it's well lit. There's free Wi-Fi. The toilets are always clean. The food is good and at a very reasonable price, which sometimes is hard to find in the heart of London. So the whole idea with the wide open space and with the exhibition space is to bring people in and make sure that they feel welcome here. Now, in the last few years, we've had to add security, which has made the dynamic a little bit difficult in some ways. But the idea is really, it's for you. Please come in. We want you to come in.
So I hope you agree it was certainly worth including this little gem in this series. Cue music. Brass band, of course.